Hi there. Welcome to On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G, and this is a podcast about work. Each episode, I talk with someone about how they do work, how they feel about it, and how it relates to the rest of their life. Today, I'm talking with Kurt Newman. Kurt has had many incarnations and is currently an independent insurance broker. Kurt Newman, welcome to On Work.
Thanks, Joel.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Yeah, pleased to be here.
Yay. So one of the first jobs I had was detailing cars, and I think my dad got me the job, and my dad was a lawyer, and I think this was a client of his, and it was one of those things where, like, you know, your parent finds you a job, and they say, go do the job. And so I worked with this guy detailing cars, and somehow, like, it really ends up relating to a lot of my life. Like, I learned how to clean windows from this guy, like side to side and up and down, but not in circles. And like cleaning out vents with like a flathead screwdriver and a little rag at the end. And like something about attention to detail. Like, I'm a very detail oriented cleaner.
Yeah.
And it just, like, at certain points in my life, I'd be like, because I was a car detailer, I knew what a car detailer was. And it just sort of was kind of for a long time in the back of my head, and it kind of contributed to my personality in some way.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and I didn't want the job. I don't necessarily enjoy the job, but somehow, like, it connected with me. And I was wondering if you have, like, an early job of yours that you can tell me about.
Yeah, I've had so many weird jobs in my life, but I agree with you that there are a lot of jobs that I've done that little snippets of those jobs, little skills that I got from those jobs. Yeah, I kind of use them today. My first job, real job, was working as a stock clerk at a grocery store chain in Chicago area.
Oh.
This Italian grocery store chain with total mafia run.
Oh, okay. Like, really?
Oh yeah, full on.
Oh.
And so I remember wanting to do a very good job, and like you said, be very detail oriented, because you had this kind of Italian Goomba guy manager staring over your shoulder, inspecting how fast you could cut a box open and then use the price tag stamper. And this, I'm old enough where it was the old metal one with the ink blot on there. And you just, like, use the box cutter really fast and then open it up and then bam, 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 all the way around the box, and then throw those cans up there. And then you'd hopefully get just a real slight nod of approval from this guy, Joe, you know, real rough looking guy.
What was your motivation to get that job?
Oh, well, it was the first job. And I remember walking around, you know, back in the day when you just walk from store to store and put in applications. And that was they were expanding out into the suburbs, and this is their first foray out into the suburbs from the city. Yeah. And they just needed bodies that were young guys that could stock the entire store for the grand opening. So they just needed people.
Yeah.
And I just needed a job.
Yeah. What did your parents or the adults in your life do when you were a kid?
My dad, he did a bunch of different jobs when I was really little. He was a truck driver, and then he was a machinist, so he was a tool and die maker. So he made, you know, the metal dies that go into the big machines, the big presses that punch out. Primarily, their big client was American Can Company. So they punched out beer cans and soda cans and stuff like that, the dies that he made. And then my mom was she worked as a secretary. So,
Traditional type jobs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They were, you know, he was a pretty blue collar guy. And,
Did you see the Obama Netflix special on work?
I didn't.
Yeah. He talks about how, like, maybe our parents or your parents are, I think we're similar age, I think, but there was a generation of his parents anyhow, who just did the job and didn't necessarily need a purpose. You know, like, you went to when I hear you talk about your dad, it reminds me of, like, what I've heard in this show. Like, Obama was like, yeah, you just went and you did the job, and then you came home and you didn't, like, have existential dread about doing the job. And I was wondering if you think that your parents or your dad felt that about going to work.
You know, I asked my parents, I remember in my late 20s, I went through kind of a little bit of a medical scare, and I was spending some time with my parents, and I asked my dad some things about when he in his 30s, I believe, he got a scare where he had some neurological stuff go on, and was they misdiagnosed him with MS. He didn't
Scary.
have MS, but
Yeah.
back then it was, they didn't know. And so he had all these dreams of doing all kinds of stuff, but then he told me that he just set a goal of staying healthy enough, like stick to one job, do that job, and his goal was to see first his kids graduate and then his kids go off to college. And so I realized at like 27 years old, it's like, oh, my parents sacrificed. They just buckled down and did the work, not for themselves, but for their kids.
You
You know what I
say
mean?
sacrifice, but it also could have provided purpose.
Yeah. He was happy to go off to work. He was
Yeah.
bored with the job late in his career,
Yeah.
but he did it for 30 something years. So,
Wow. Wow.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. What kind of student were you, Kurt?
Well, I had two older sisters that were kind of overachievers. They were in all the school musicals. One, my oldest sister had the
Is achieving
leads.
being in the School Musical, is that what achieving is?
She got straight A's, and she
Yeah.
was always the lead in the school musical. She was homecoming queen. She was in every sport. So they kind of she got a scholarship to college. My other sister were just worked really hard, so I was the third in line, and they went off to college, and so I just worked. I had to work hard to get decent grades, but then, went off to college and did my thing just like they did. So yeah, wasn't a great student, but
Yeah.
wasn't a slacker.
Yeah, why do you think like I was a slacker, like I mean the homework amount of homework I did was minimal, if at all. Like it was always a struggle to do the work for me. Like I didn't do homework, I would just show up, take a test, and I would get like, whatever, an A or a B on a test, but do zero homework. And then, I was surprised to find out that I had to go to summer school one summer. I was like, oh, I thought I was a smart kid. But how do you think it is that you managed to like, do the work? Like, did your parents encourage you to do the work? Did you have support or motivation from other ways, or did it come from within?
That's a good question. Yeah, genetics versus nurturing. My parents and my dad, he didn't graduate from high school. He went off to work in his senior year, and he already, this was back in the day when he had already taken machine shop classes in high school, and so he could work at a machine shop at like 18, and make okay money. So, and then he got his GED later in the army, but I think he really, really wanted to see his kids do well and go to college, because he had a uncle that he really looked up to, and who had gone off to engineering school and ended up being one of the vice presidents of US Steel eventually.
Wow.
So that, and his kids were all doctors, so he really wanted us to go to school. So I didn't really want to let him down, and really my sisters were, they kind of set the bar pretty high. So
Yeah.
I just kind of said, oh, this is what you do. You just bust your butt
Yeah.
and get as good a grades as you can.
It was the sort of the culture of your family.
Right.
Yeah. And did you go to college? Yeah. How did that go?
It was great. I loved college. I was pretty shy in high school, and got to I ended up I went to, I was in Chicago, but I wanted to, oddly enough, study wildlife management.
Oh.
And so that wasn't really something available near Chicago. So I went to school about a few hundred miles north in Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, right in the center of the state. And they had a big natural resources college, and I really came out of my shell there, met really great people, and still have great friends back there. And I worked really hard in college. Although sophomore year, I had to learn socialization and what it was to party and experiment like that. And so I had to dig myself out of a hole my sophomore year, but then kind of got straight A's down the stretch. Yeah. And ended up with like double major and a minor and a teaching certification. And I was on the 6-year plan. My dad was a little confused. He said, I thought it was 4 years. It was a 4-year school.
But you just kept working at it and you enjoyed it once you got into it.
I loved it. Yeah, I studied a lot of different things. So I was kind of scattered and ended up with a cultural geography major and social science major. So nothing that I could really go right into work with.
What did you do after college, and did you have a first job or a first career?
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought, what am I going to do with a cultural geography degree and social science degree? So I tacked on a teaching certification at the end. That was my practical dad. My father was definitely wondering what the heck are you going to do with that. So I got the teaching cert, and I went right out of college. I started substitute teaching, and oddly enough, I subbed at my old high school district, which was really weird to walk into my old high school and sub in. I'd walk into the teacher's lounge or into the social studies department, and these teachers were like, oh man, we're getting old. Our students are now our colleagues, you know.
That's trippy because it's sort of a relatively short amount of time between graduating high school and ending up back at your school as a teacher.
Oh, big time. And I looked so young, so young. The hall monitors that were in my high school that I knew would stop me when I was teaching and say, young man, I need your hall pass. And I'd be like, Mrs. Pacer, I am now a teacher here.
Oh, they still,
Oh,
right.
you
Their
guys
mental
look.
model of you was still a student.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. Yeah.
That's adorable.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Did you
Yeah.
like teaching? I mean, teaching sounds difficult. Substitute teaching sounds really difficult.
It was a grind. We had classroom teaching. Right from the start, I was thinking, oh, I don't think I can do this. Student teaching was one of the hardest things I ever did, as far as just being tired all the time, lesson planning and facing, high school students every day who were really not interested in listening to me talk about stuff like
Anything. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want
anything
to hear talk
really. I
about
mean, I was
anything.
teaching geography and US history, and they didn't want to hear about the Monroe Doctrine, stuff like that. So pretty hard. Yeah.
That's super tough. It wears on you. Did it like it's like at the end of the day, do you feel drained after doing that?
Yeah, I've never been so tired in my life. You're emotionally exhausted if you had a hard day managing a classroom. I would physically, you know how you can get some, our family's kind of funny. We don't have a ton of body odor generally, not like I've got a good a wonderful Sicilian friend, but he's just got that very masculine smell. And but at the end of a really difficult day, emotional day teaching, I literally stunk. I was so I and so I knew in my head that that stress, that biochemical reactions were literally, I think they kill people, and I didn't think that that's something I could sustain over the long haul is being a classroom teacher.
How long did you do that for?
When I graduated, I worked that a year subbing, and then I got enough money and I got in a car and I drove west and I drove all the way to California. And my sisters were already living in San Diego. I didn't really want to live in California per se, but I just wanted to land someplace out west where I had a base and some support with my sisters. And I thought, okay, I guess I'm going to teach out here. And oddly enough, my sister was living with a woman who she introduced me to this woman, and we started dating. And then that woman had a friend who did this thing called environmental education, running outdoor trips. And I've said, what's that? And I never went back into the classroom after that. I started doing running outdoor programs with middle school and high school kids, backpacking, canoe trips, environmental ed, leadership courses, outward bound, stuff like that. So,
That totally aligns with you and your story,
yeah, it
right?
worked
Like
out.
the education that you had and the interest that you had, and like it seems like that job would be pretty, that sort of work would be like it would make you feel good, you would enjoy it, you would be energized by it.
I loved it. It seemed to be that perfect match of I kind of like teaching, but I loved the outdoors, and I had a background in wildlife management, at least some environmental. I took all these environmental courses, so I had a pretty good basis for that. And then and I remember being so joyous, literally just full of joy running these outward bound trips. And oddly enough, it was some of the happiest moments of my life and the lowest pay I've ever had.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
$40, $40 a day, and you're working 24/7, kind of thing. It was ironic.
Well, I can certainly relate to that working at Alaska Wildland Adventures with you as like that was certainly I when you talk about that, I feel that what I felt when I first started working at AWOL, and like the pay didn't matter at all and the work was just like totally spiritually fulfilling for me.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
It's also I also like to think about the days when one just like went without a job. I don't know if you had a job on your way to California, but I can certainly think about most of the times I changed jobs when I was younger. I didn't have another job lined up. Was that the case for you?
Well, I mean, the good thing, getting that teaching certification in college really was this amazing little bit of education and a tool that I used for the rest of my life, where I was able to just land anywhere and I could always substitute teach. And I would just do the shotgun approach. I'd show up in a place and just apply for to sub in every school district in an area, and I'd have work 5 days a week, although when I first got to California, I applied for my my teacher's license there, and it was such a slow process. By the time I got it, I was already doing outdoor education, so I didn't really do classroom stuff initially. It was about 15 years of outdoor education, and then guiding up in Alaska later when I met you. Yeah, I transitioned from education to the ecotourism in Alaska, where I could kind of be an educator, but it was, with adults that were like, oh my gosh, Kurt, that raven lecture that you just did was fascinating,
How did you get your job working in Alaska?
So I was working my first job in California. That was in 1990. I was working for a place called Boojum Institute for Experiential Education. And it was this old, very, started in the 70s by a bunch of hippie outdoor people from Prescott College. And I was doing outdoor ed, environmental ed, and I met one of the coworkers. My first year was a guy named Brad Hessel. So that's and Brad's older brother, of course, is Kirk Hessel, who's the president of, or the he's the head of Alaska Wildland Adventures, where you and I met up in Alaska. And Brad mentioned, how I work up in Alaska in the summer, and I'm a guide, and I take people out, as a naturalist guide. And I said, oh, that sounds like a great, really great job. You think you could put in a word for me up there? And he said, yeah, I can put in a word for you, but it is my older brother's business. So if you get a job there, you better kick ass. And I said, oh, wow, okay. And so, yeah.
Well, I think this is a good spot to take a quick break here.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Kurt. We're going to take a quick break and be right back after this message from our sponsor. Wondering what to do next? Not feeling great about anything? Deciding between scrolling on your phone, eating due to boredom, and thinking depressing thoughts about the future? How about go outside? Go outside comes with fresh air, perspective, physical movement, and possible human interaction. Go outside includes all-time classics, such as walking, biking, birding, hiking, running, swimming, shopping, sitting, and skipping. Consider Go Outside Premium Plus. Bundle friends, family, coworkers, endorphins, and pets. Next time you feel like you want to fade into the floor, try Go Outside. Use Go Outside once a day, every day, when in doubt, feeling good, feeling bad. Go Outside works like magic 99 times out of 100. We're back. If you've totally spaced out and forgotten what you're listening to, this is On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G, and my guest today is Kurt Newman, Medicare plan specialist and inspirational human being. Thank you again for being here, Kurt.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say.
You are inspirational. I always think fondly of you, and I do recall meeting you and when you did work at AWOD and I worked there, and I just remember meeting you and thinking, there is someone who is naturally of this environment. Like they just seemingly belong here. And that was a nice experience for me.
What a great crew of people. That's one of the best things about working at I feel super, super blessed that the byproduct of working in certain jobs, working in outdoor ed in Southern California at Boojum Institute, those are my favorite people that I still hang out with. They were inspirational. They're just funny and vibrant and healthy. And then when I went to Alaska, it was like, oh, it's more of the same. And they know how to dress up and do silly parties. And I still do that stuff. So it's
Yes,
great.
yes. So one thing that's important to me and other people I've talked to is the relationships you have with people who you work with, you know, the community of people you work with, or the team that you're on, or the team that you're not on. And I was wondering if you can tell me a little bit about the work you do now. And it sounds like you mostly are a coworker of one. You work maybe for yourself. Can you tell me a little bit about your job now and how it is working alone?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It was a hard transition going from doing seasonal kind of outdoor physical work to doing this, insurance guy stuff, which I was pretty reluctant at first, but in 2010 I got a foot injury, really sidelined me. It got bad enough where I was in a wheelchair for a number of months, and so I really had kind of a identity crisis at the moment, saying, what am I supposed to do going forward? And so I just decided I answered an ad in a Facebook, or not Facebook, but Craigslist ad, and started doing doing I was working for a insurance broker who was doing Medicare plans, and I was just helping him in his office. And after 8 months, he said, you should just do this and get your broker's license. And I thought, I don't want to be an insurance guy. I can't be an insurance guy. But when I looked at my skill set, I'm not an engineer, I'm not, but I know how to talk to people and I know how to do a lesson plan. And basically, I just treat it as I'm an educator and I said, these are your options. These are your Medicare plan options for you. And I meet people at their house. So I do house calls. And so I drive around and tell people these are your options. And I don't treat it as a sales job at all. And I think people really appreciate that because I'm kind of honest to a fault. I'm not going to put them on a plan that they don't like or isn't going to be good for them. And I think people have picked up on that over the last 13 years, and I really enjoy people and their stories, and especially people who have lived, they're all 65 and over, most of them. So you get to hear their backstory and where, what they did for work, and it's a lot like guiding up at Alaska Wildland Adventures, where you're out on a hike and you're asking people what they do and where they're from. And so yeah, I think it's a it was a good, I didn't think it would be what I wanted, but then in the end it was a very good fit for my personality, I think.
Yeah, you gave it a try. You thought maybe you, when you started, you didn't really have an inkling that it would work out in the
No,
long
it was
run.
just I was literally cold calling people on the phone and chatting them up, and the guy I was working with says, "You're pretty good at talking to people and you know how to deliver information clearly." And my guests or my guests, my clients say that I'm, "Oh, you're really clear." And I go, "Well, yeah, it's pretty easy to do this. When you're doing the same lesson plan every day, it's, yeah, I get pretty good at that, you know."
It's nice to be an expert at something and then to be able to relay it in a clear way.
Yeah. And it's problem solving, you're trying to figure out, oh, you're on all these different medications and you have all these doctors, and some of those doctors are networked with this plan, but they're not networked with that plan. And this is our weird sort of socialized medicine that we
Is
have in the
every
United
is everybody
States, but
different?
it's,
Like you research the people or the clients or the customers individually and then come back with information for them?
yeah, I get it ahead of time from them, like, who are your doctors and who are your what are your medications and what dentist do you have and what eye doctor do you have? And I do the research at home and I show up at their house and I say, these are the plans that are going to give you your biggest bang for your buck, and choose which one you want.
And how do you get paid?
Yeah, it's as an independent broker, I work with about 9 different insurance companies. I've got to do trainings with each company each fall. So September is very busy for me doing the trainings, and then you get up to speed with each company, and then that company, whichever plan my client chooses, that company pays me a commission for assisting them in that sign-up process. And then so you get a initial commission, and then if that person continues as a client of yours, you get a small, what they call renewal commission each year.
There's no cost to the customer.
No. No. So it's pretty, yeah, it's pretty nice that way. I don't have to sell my services necessarily.
It would seem like a no-brainer for me, like when I get there, to get an independent insurance person, right?
If you get a good ethical one that represents a lot of options, not, you don't want a captive agent that represents one plan and they hard sell you on that, like Ned Needleman from Groundhog Day or something, trying to sell life insurance.
Does it provide you with purpose? Are you happy with your purpose or what you're doing for work every day or every week?
I feel good about providing a service for these people. They're very, very grateful because, our system, as most of us know, our healthcare system and health insurance system is so convoluted in the United States, and Medicare is also pretty convoluted as well, that we, people are confused, and they really appreciate that I try to make it, a pretty clear situation for them. And, I get hugs from people. I get a Today I got farm fresh eggs from some people that, they said, "Hey, I appreciate you. Here's our eggs, and here's a dozen eggs from our chickens," and that, and they all had little eggs, had little initials on there. That one's Thelma, and that one's from this other. And yesterday, 2 days ago, I got some salmon from a guy who just got back from the coast. So that's pretty cool.
One thing that is difficult for me is getting motivated to do work that I'm not motivated to do. And like, working at AWR in tourism, it was easy to do the work, but the work I do now is making trainings and it's difficult for me to do the work. And I'm wondering for you, like, is it easy for you to get into doing work or a project motive, if it's something you like or don't like, or how is it that you mentally approach projects and tasks?
Oh, just in general.
I guess in general, for me, I think it's similar to work. Like I have a hard time sometimes, I definitely have a hard time starting a work project, like a training or a PowerPoint presentation or something. And I'll often have a hard time, like at home, like I'll be walking around the house, well, I got to clean the bathroom or I've got to clear the gutters or whatever it is. And I have this sense of like difficulty to start.
Oh,
That's where
yeah.
my problem is. I have a difficulty starting the project unless I'm properly motivated or things align right. And I'm wondering how it is for you.
Yeah, that's pretty similar for me too. I mean, I'm pretty good at finding all kinds of other things that are way more fun to do than doing sitting down and buckling down and starting a project. And I overthink stuff sometimes. Like I built a big awning over my porch in the back, and man, I must have ruminated on that for an entire year, and looking at other people's porches and stuff, and hemming and hawing, and finally, like, oh, I gotta get this thing done because the rains are coming,
Does it bother
So,
you, your process?
yeah, sometimes, yeah, absolutely. Sometimes the procrastination, not a great thing. And I'm not happy about that, but for
Lately, I've been
sure.
thinking that procrastination is, we talk a little bit about genetics or nature or nurture. I think my procrastination, I'm trying to think that it might be like a genetic, or an unexpressed gene.
Right.
Do you do caffeine?
Oh, yeah, big time. My girlfriend and I have a we have dueling espresso makers in the kitchen, and she's pretty good about preloading them the night before. And when you're walking into the kitchen as a zombie, you can just click the button on there. So that's pretty they're pretty high octane. Yeah, French roast for sure. It does help.
Right on. Well, I think we're gonna wrap it up here a little bit. Is there anything else you wanted to share maybe about work? Or do you think that you'll be doing this work that you're doing now for a while, or do you look for other work?
I don't look for any other work. The upside with this particular job is that I was, I did seasonal work for years and years. And it was always there, you could always see the light at the end of the tunnel. You might be working very hard, but okay, the season will come to an end and I'll have a bit of a breather. And the good thing about this job is it's pretty cyclical. Like right now is my super, super busy time. It's open enrollment. People are switching plans. This year there was a big snafu where an insurance company just folded. So I had all these clients on that plan and I need to switch them out. So I'm meeting with all those people and I'm working 12-hour days every day for the next couple of months, but then I see the end of the light at the end of the tunnel, and then I'll have a break. And summers tend to be pretty slow, so then I go play and go rafting. So it's a good lifestyle. So I just plan on doing this. It's not physically hard. I just plan on doing this until I can't really, or I just, the whole system implodes and I no longer can do it.
Well, I'm really happy for you. I feel like I should say congratulations on finding something that's working for you that you're comfortable being in and you not needing to look for something else. That's pretty
Yeah,
awesome.
thanks. Yeah, it's been a unexpected thing to get into this field. Yeah.
So I have a closing question. And is there something new in your life, a habit, an idea, or an insight that's making things better for you? Maybe something you've tried and or something you become aware of that's improved your life?
I was going through a little bit of I guess melancholy. I turned 60 last year, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, in another 10 years I'll be 70, and that's really old. I feel pretty good now, but yeah, there was some melancholy. My dad passed away in February.
Sorry.
He was old, 94, and he was ready to go, but so there was some melancholy there, and it was affecting my relationship with my girlfriend. And finally, I just decided not that long ago, I'm just gonna kind of wake up and think about what I'm grateful for. and just run down the list of all the good things I have.
Like
And
daily?
yeah, kind of, it's been kind of daily now. And so that has really helped the relationship, helped me out. And just
Do you write it down?
I don't. I just think about it. And then after this busy season, I'm planning on trying to light a fire under my butt to join a band, because I play guitar and I just want to kind of, I need to express some creative side. So
Awesome. Well, cool. Thank you for sharing that, Kurt. And thanks for being on the podcast.
absolutely. Thanks for inviting me, Joel. It's been fun.
Yay. Well, that's it for today's conversation. Thanks again to Kurt for being here. And thank you so much for listening. This has been On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G. Music credit, Life is Good by Beat Mechanic from the Free Music Archive, used under Creative Commons license. Additional emotional support from Water for drinking, bathing, recreating, staring at, and toe dipping. That's all for this episode. Be present, keep going, look up, and take care.